Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Real good. Real good. We needed that one. Edmonton needed that one. The Oilers needed that one. The Oilers fans needed that one. The city of Edmonton needed that one. The province of Alberta needed that one. The universe, Bruce, was crying out for that 6-1 Oilers victory over the Los Angeles Kings. Bruce, let's get right at it. Let's just get right at it. Because we're going to do, it's late already, and we're going to do two good things each. Two good things, two bad things, two numbers, and one conundrum podcast. But we're going to do two good things each. What is your good thing?
No, my first good thing is Stu Skinner, who he just came out right from the start and looked like he was calm, confident, and in charge. And that was just apparent in his demeanor, on ice body language, right from the get-go, that he was dialed in and he wasn't going to be giving up any free goals. And in fact, he did not. He gave up one goal, which essentially had no chance on. And otherwise, he fought through and fought off everything else, which included 28 shots on net, one goal. And of those 10, we counted as grade A shots. And I just liked his game. He looked confident enough to actually exude confidence that I think landed on other players. It certainly landed on me watching in my sofa that the goalie that had been, under intense scrutiny, let's face it, was ready for this big test in the road game to claim back home ice advantage, and he delivered in spades.
He did, Bruce. His demeanor after the game the other night was interesting because, he just said he didn't do enough. He wasn't much of a factor in the game, which was an interesting way to put it in a game where he let in at least one bad goal and arguably a couple others, one or maybe, they were more iffies. But it was interesting, his demeanor. He's very calm. And contrast that with, remember, Jack Campbell's meltdowns, poor guy. Blaming himself and heaping the scorn of the universe on himself when he was playing poorly early this year. So I think that kind of calmness and coolness, which I think he learned somewhat from Mike Smith, having that kind of mentor early in his career, is helping Skinner right now. Bruce, he needed Stuart Skinner needed to have a good game. Yep. Let's face it, he has two bad playoffs in a row. There's suddenly talk in Edmonton, you can't go into another season with him as your number one goalie. You got to do something. Yeah. So he's got to play well in these playoffs. The goalie has to come through in the playoffs. He's got to play at least as well as he did in the regular season if people are going to have confidence in him. And this was I haven't gone over the games from all last year or his grades that he got, but this was his best playoff game that I can recall. He was really sharp. You put it well, exuding confidence. There was one play. I think the Oilers were up, I think it's 4-1 at this point, late in the second period. And Adam Henrique loses a board battle. And then Ekholm loses track of course, Adrian Kempe. And Kempe's in all alone on Skinner. And Stu Skinner got the best of him in that one. He finally stopped Kempe on a really big and important shot. It was as big a save. Not as spectacular as a save as Talbot's save on Draisaitl at the end of the second period in the last game. But that was a huge moment for Stu Skinner, I think, and for the Oilers that he's making that save. It would have been 4-2 if he had scored, and we would have had a game, I think, in the third period, much more of a game than we got. Yeah. We had kind of roller derby in the third period. But he was good. I gave him an 8 out of 10. I thought he was great.
Yeah, that stop off of Kempe, Kempe did not miss. He wired a shot right inside the post above the pad, and Stu got the blocker down and was able to tip it past the post. And, you know, this was a, you know, a dangerous proven Oiler killer sniper from close range, getting a sudden great chance on net that he, you know, snapped right on target, and goalie had the answer for it, and that problem went away. And when they got to the second intermission, still leading 4-1, I felt pretty confident. And bearing in mind, I'm a survivor. Well, I don't know if you call it a survivor of the what I call the debacle on Manchester. game three at LA, series tied 1-1, where the Oilers had a 5-0 lead after the second period and found a way to lose. So I'm permanently scarred.
And we are lucky if those are our permanent scars in life, Bruce, but I agree they are for we hockey fans. All right, my good thing, Bruce.
Very younger. Oh, what a penalty.
I barely remember the game. I don't even know if I saw that game. I might have been somewhere else. Anyway, I think I was in Nova Scotia driving around. Anyway, Bruce, my good thing was Evander Kane, who in this game was everything, everywhere, all at once. He put an indelible mark on this game. You know, the Gordie Howe hat trick, a goal and assist in a fight. But, I mean, all year long, people have been saying, well, like people defending Evander Kane, the people who defend Evander Kane were saying, well, he's going to come up big in the playoffs. He's going to be a difference maker in the playoffs. And some people were starting to scoff at that rather loudly. You know, there was the Mark Spector took a run at verbal run at Kane, saying that he was wearing out his welcome off the ice with his team. Was the what Spector had to say. There was all kinds of controversy about this, and lots of people starting to scoff and doubt at Kane's game. But Kane had a pretty strong end to the regular season before he sat for those handful of games with his with his sports hernia, mm-hmm. And he was good in the first two games. Bruce, I gave him a 9. I would have given him a 10, except there's my bad thing is going to be he's involved in that. I'm going to save that for my bad thing, though. I won't mention it here. But in terms of the good stuff that he did, I mean, he was bumped up to the Draisaitl line, you know, something he's been lobbying for in public pretty much all season long. So he got his wish, and he was very happy. Could see it on his face there in the interview between periods. Anyway, he was bumped up, and he immediately got a grade A shot on net. Nugent Hopkins set him up in the high slot, and he pounded a shot on net. And then he made an absolutely fantastic play. It was a play reminiscent or made famous in Edmonton by Glenn Anderson and Mark Messier. When one of them would charge down the wing, take the puck behind the net, would pass it back behind him, just where he had been, to the trailing player, and the trailing player would then deposit the puck generally into an open net, because the goalie would be fooled by the player going around the net thinking there's going to be a wraparound attempt. And that's what happened with Cam Talbot in this play. Kane went behind the net. Now, I don't know if he intended to hit the net or not. Maybe not. Maybe he did. But anyway, he successfully got the puck into the slot and fooled Cam Talbot, who was way on the other side of the net. That's the important thing. And Leon Draisaitl came in, and he had a slice of the net. It wasn't like a wide open gaping net.
Well, but he made a low angle from his other side from his usual low angle shots.
Yeah. Leon's pretty good at making those shots, and he made no mistake. He just drained that. It was a fantastic, absolutely fantastic goal to put the Oilers up, I believe, 2-0 at that point. In between periods, Kevin Bieksa of Sportsnet said, an unbelievable smart hockey IQ goal by Draisaitl and Kane. That's exactly what it was. Then came the bad thing, which we're going to get to. But right close after that, Kane did what he does. He went to the net, and Cody Ceci put the puck on net from the point, and Kane deflected it in off his knee. It was a good, excellent, greasy goal. 4-1, and really put the game, I think, out of reach. The Kings had scored then, and just two goal game. Anything can happen, but making it 4-1 right away was fantastic. Then come the fireworks. And Kane was often the victim here, I have to say. There was a nasty little slew footish hit by Blake Lazat, who is a dirty player, one of the many dirty players on the Kings. There's a number of them, and he is one of them. Kane, I thought for sure he was going to take a penalty on that play, but he was able not to take a penalty, although he kept talking to the refs afterwards. Next, in the third period, he takes, I think, a fairly dirty elbow in a hit from Andreas Englund.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like he got his elbow. He got his elbow up there, and
he got his arm up.
Yeah, I think he got enough of his elbow. That was a bit of a dirty hit. Yeah, I mean, if it had been on Pierre-Luc Dubois, Dubois wouldn't have gotten up for a half hour. Such would have been his pain and agony and drama around being hit like that. But anyway,
Kane got up
and he beat up Andreas Englund, punched him in the face, which in the moment I was kind of thinking, why are you taking this fight? But this is Evander Kane. This is who he is. He wouldn't be Evander Kane. I didn't mind it either. I thought initially that it was Kempe that hit him. He was fighting, for some reason, he's fighting Englund. And I thought, that's stupid. But it was Englund who hit him. So then I
went after the guy.
Yeah, he went after the guy. I actually really liked that. And he punched him in the face. That's Evander Kane. That's playoff hockey. That was a fantastic game from Kane. And if he can physically keep playing like that, it's going to be huge for the Edmonton Oilers, because those are game-changing moments, and he's a game-changing physical presence on the ice.
Yeah, well, he had a few potentially game-changing moments. I won't ruin your bad thing, but I noted the bad thing. The goal, the assist, the fight, the misconduct, the headshot, the slew foot that he was on the receiving end of, and also that time when they, on the delayed penalty, when he whipped the pass back to the point and Nugent Hopkins just barely got a skate on it, deflected it about 5 degrees, and the puck went down the ice and passed Oilers net into the corner about 20 feet wide. And I looked at the replay a few times, never saw an end zone, but it looked to me like if that puck had gotten right through Nuge, it might well have gone right in the net.
It was scary. See, I was a little late in the game because I'm writing game grades and doing the screen chat stuff, and I was following it, and you had already commented on it. So I know that I knew that it didn't go in when I saw the play. But even knowing that it wasn't going in, it was scared the hell out of me, because that was really close.
Yeah, it was too close for sure. So he is a high event player, and I don't know that it's possible to get higher eventer than he was in this game, because there was all kinds of stuff. He was an event magnet in this game.
He wrote like 5 headlines. All right, Bruce, your second good thing.
Yeah, there's lots of good things tonight. But I'm going to go with the response of Edmonton's big-name players and the distribution of points. This is after a game where Kempe had 2, Doughty had 1, Fiala had 1, and Kopitar had 1 for the Kings. And the Oilers' goals were coming from their fourth line and third defense pair. And I and others were saying, the boys on the big lines have got to respond. Well, this is how they responded tonight. Zach Hyman, 2 goals. Darnell Nurse had a great game, I thought, 1 assist. Leon Draisaitl, 2 goals, 1 assist. Evander Kane, 1 goal, 1 assist, and all that other stuff. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, 3 assists. And Connor McDavid, 1 goal, 2 assists. So basically all their goals, Hyman 2, Draisaitl 2, Kane and McDavid 1 each, right? Like those are basically their highest profile forwards on the team. And they all answered the bell by chipping in significantly to Edmonton's offensive output.
Yeah, that was a huge goal, obviously, by Zach Hyman. Early first on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting the lead on these guys is a real big deal. There's been no lead changes in this series.
So, Bruce, I'm going to – I was thinking of going with Knobloch, but I've already mentioned that he moved Kane up. Mm-hmm. I will go with the Oilers penalty killing in this game. I think the Kings, just looking here, they had 858 of power play time on five different power plays, total of 858 power play time. And according to our tracking in this game, did they even get – they got two grade A shots on the power play, and both of them came – one in the third period and one early in the game, kind of the last grade A shot. I think the first one was by Kempe, the first grade A shot of the game. And the last one, the first one was by Kempe, which was a fairly hard one timer from outside.
Right.
And Skinner looked good on that. The Oilers PK work, Bruce, has just been outstanding in this series. And they're all to credit. This is a group effort at this point. They're all doing their jobs. They're not overcommitting. The Kings have rarely been able to dissect them with a cross ice pass. And you know, I'm a little bit superstitious on this, because a penalty kill is great until it isn't, and things can go south quickly, right? And it's just a little mistake or something can go wrong. But so I'm well aware of that. That this may not last in this series. But it has been excellent, excellent work. I think Adam Henrique has added a lot to the PK. But the guys who have been there all along, Nugent Hopkins and Fogel and Matthias Janmark, Ryan McLeod, really getting the job done as well. Mm-hmm. So, and the defensemen. They're just, you know, Nurse was a tower of power in this game. Darnell Nurse took a lot of heat after the last game, Bruce. He was fantastic this game. And he stopped, I think, Blake Lizotte. This wasn't on the power play, but Lizotte broke up the ice and got a great A shot. Nuge was a little slow on that back check. And the puck then on the rebound from Skinner went right to the slot. And I think it would have went in, but Nurse blocked that shot. So... just great defensive play.
Not sure who it was got the rebound. Lizotte got the first shot, and Skinner stopped that, and it looked like the rebound was a tap-in.
Yeah.
And Nurse came up with a big road hockey save to keep that one out.
Wasn't that a great play? That was. Yes, that was. Yeah, yes, that really was. And good for Darnell Nurse. Actually, he's been really good these playoffs, but his game in the first game, his game was marred by a couple weird plays, and then in the last game it was marred by one major mistake that he made, but really it was only
kind of only one goal.
On a very important goal, but he had played well otherwise.
Yes,
this game he put it all together. He was fantastic, so good for Darnell Nurse.
He's very composed in this game, Nurse, and you know, he was making smart decisions. Like he was making plays. Like he wasn't rushing things. Like two or three times when the Kings were setting up in their 1-3-1, he just sort of, well, I can wait for us to make a full line change and for forwards to come back and have options, and there's no reason to force the issue, which forcing the issue is sometimes his biggest bugaboo. And there was another play I noticed, just a simple little thing where he had the puck along the boards just outside the blue line because it had been cleared out. And it was on his backhand, and his first play was to go cross-ice backhand to CeCe on the other side, just outside the blue line. And you could see him thinking, nope, bad idea. I'm just going to turn with it towards the boards and, you know, get my body between. And the Kings coming out at me that are trying to chip it free and get an odd man rush. They're not going to do that because I'm going to make a smart play and protect the puck. Just a simple thing, but... he was doing those kind of, making those kind of plays consistently in this game. And I thought he was, frankly, a tower of power back there.
I loved it when he was holding the puck there, as you mentioned, because the Kings fans, it was driving the
Kings
fans
me, bro.
crazy. It was, they were getting all antsy because I don't know why you should just stand there.
But the in some ways, you down.
Just stand there and let them, tick away the game if they're going to play it that way, but probably not. Maybe it's, that would be a little bit rash, but it did lead to a goal as well. I mean, that was, he held the puck. And it was like roller derby. Remember in roller derby, like they would, all the players would get revved up and the whole team would come out as one, kind of in a wing formation. And on that one, Draisaitl, Draisaitl and Kane go flying by and then up the boards and he passes it to Draisaitl and they're off to the races on that Messier to Anderson style goal. So, that was a big relief. The Oilers need him to play well, just like they need Skinner to play well. And both of them came through with great games. Bad things, Bruce. What is your bad thing?
Yeah, not a lot of bad things tonight. I mean, I'm tempted to say LA Kings and some of their dirty hits, which I know I'm biased, but I saw a few couple slew foots and stuff that were pretty blatant. You're going to single out one thing, so I won't, but just a little play by Sam Carrick where the fourth line got stuffed in their own zone for 30 or 40 seconds, not too long. They finally got it out and outside the blue line, and Carrick went for some kind of home run pass, missed, iced the puck. And now instead of getting out of their zone and relieving the pressure, they have to go back and take a face-off in their own zone against a fresh LA line. And it's just a small little mistake because there wasn't really many what I would call clangers of mistakes. You know, maybe Ryan McLeod's unnecessary penalty. You know, there's a couple of little things like that. But nothing too major, with the exception of the one play that cost Edmonton the one goal against. A player like that, there's not enough to be gained by going for something. Get it to center and dump it in and get the hell off the ice at that point. You know, you had your 40 seconds, you survived the pressure, and instead, lose the face off and there's another 30 seconds of pressure against the tired line. So, small thing.
Fair enough. Yeah, I watched the play.
I'm just saying that was a mistake.
The mistake that I'm going to focus on was a big thing. Mm-hmm. And it was a big thing because it was typical of the kind of thing that have cost the Edmonton Oilers games all year long. It was a bad mistake when the team had the lead. And it was a mistake of judgment, which is even worse. So the Oilers are up 3-0. 5 minutes into the third period, and out comes Kane, Nugent Hopkins, and Draisaitl. And for the first 30, 40 seconds of that shift, they're stuck in their own zone. And they've been working hard already for like 40 seconds. Yep. Finally, they get it out, and Kane rushes it in after they've been out for 45 seconds already, and Kane rushes it into the offensive zone. You shouldn't be taking more than 50-second shifts. You should be looking to get off the ice after 40 seconds, but they have it in the offensive zone. And even though there's ample time for all three of those players during about 15 second cycle in the offensive zone, not one of them got off the ice. Bruce, I just thought, what are you
asking for trouble?
What are you guys? I thought it was selfish, honestly. It's offensive players doing what they do. Now, these are great offensive players. Offensive players are selfish, right? They want to score, and they often do. So it makes them great. That same aspect can make them great. But these are all seasoned NHL veterans who have yet to win a Stanley Cup, and they will not win a Stanley Cup if they don't, on that shift, get off the ice. So I was ticked off about that even before the goal was scored. I was thinking, okay, Kane, you've brought it in, dump it in, keep it in, and they get off the ice. But no, the Kings break out, and they're all gassed, and it gets deep in the Oilers' end. Daharnay gets smoked behind in the boards, and goes out to the point, and they pass it through.
Nugent Hopkins. They pass it through Drysdale in the slot. He's not there when he should be. And Kane is just not covering Doughty at all. So this is my worst fear for this line, is that they, this kind of play where they're weak defensively anyway, and particularly so when they're gassed. So I was just, and it's 3-1 and it's a game again because of bad hockey management, bad in-game play, stuff that, that if a rookie did it, if Dylan Holloway did it, would get, people would be talking about it to the ends of the earth and would probably get him benched. So this line obviously had a really great game and scored the opposition in this game, which was huge. Leon Draisaitl, they were already good, but that play, they just, I hope Knobloch actually, because everyone's feeling good, I hope he uses that play as a like, it's the right moment to rip them for that play, because that's what they deserve. Well, and they can't have that again.
To make the point, I mean, they had the puck in the offensive zone, like you say, for a short cycle, but by the end of it, their shift had exceeded a minute. And at the end of the sequence, they were all out for like a minute 20 to a minute 30 almost, three of them. And there was one play where Draisaitl took the puck up the player's bench side and then backhanded it back into the net behind the cycle. And I'm thinking, for sure, he's making the change. He's right by the damn bench.
I thought so too.
And he circles back into the middle of the ice. And he was one of the guys that, you know, was beaten in the corner in the defensive zone because legs were pretty heavy by then, you know. And Kane was watching Doughty, and Doughty passed it, and then Doughty just walked. And Kane watched the puck, and Doughty just walked around him and wound up just, you know, all alone in front of the net getting the return pass with Kane so far away from him, he couldn't even slash him, you know.
The legs stopped working, and then the mind stops working,
yeah,
right?
Well, that's what it looked like. It takes over, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it looked like on that play. Yeah. Anyway, like, it's just not acceptable. And I think it's, like, at this point, this is cup or bust, as Leon has said, right? So don't bust, and you won't bust if you don't make plays like that.
Don't be gifting him anything.
What's your number, Bruce?
Didn't gift him much, but that was... Anyway, my number is 7-0. That is the score on special teams in this series now. The Oilers, I believe, are 7-14 in three games, and the Kings are 0-10. So, surprise number one, the Oilers had more power plays than the Kings. I didn't see that coming. But we did know Edmonton had a good power play, but LA was second penalty kill in the league this year. Oilers have rung up 7 goals and 14 chances. This after going 9-18 against them last year. So they really seem to have their number. Mind you, tonight it was 1-1 on the 5-on-3 and 1-1 on 4-on-3, as they call it here. I thought that was also a 5-on-3. But anyway, it was Oilers scored in various manpower situations. And meanwhile, the penalty kill, as you pointed out, was 5-5 in 8.5 minutes, during which time LA got 7 shots. But the Oilers in their 10 minutes, 17 shots on the power play for the Oilers and 3 goals. 17 shots in 10 minutes.
And 3 goals, yeah.
And 3 goals, yeah.
I love McDavid's goal.
Slam dunks from close range, all of them.
Yeah. McDavid was just so determined to score. He just took it hard to the net and was going to just get it in no matter what. Like to see that. Great play. Bruce, my number goes back to the PK. Vinny Deharnais led the Oilers in PK time on the ice with 4:27. But more than that, he led the Oilers with great plays on the PK. Man, he was a monster out there. He was constantly blocking off passes and tipping them away and sometimes clearing the puck all the way down the ice. He last year in the playoffs, I think it's fair to say he struggled. And he still may, but he just seems to be a different player this year. He's not... he only had one hit this game, And he's not looking for the, he's not looking to, he's not expected to be that guy. And he's not looking to be that guy who throws the monster hit. He's looking to be the guy who plays super solid defensive play. And he's getting the job done in very tough circumstances on the penalty kill. He's just, you know, he was the Oilers' best penalty killer tonight. And he probably has been this series. So he's really getting it done. Now, you know, he has been tried. He was tried infamously in the top pairing or the second pairing with Nurse, and that didn't work out. He and Kulak seem to just be really they just seem to really work well together. They have great chemistry together. So he's getting the job done at even strength. He's getting the job done on the PK. I like his play, Bruce. He's really helping this team.
Yeah, on my box event summary, they have him at 5:24 of the 8.5 minutes that the Oilers were short. And usually the event summary is...
Oh, I hadn't updated. Yeah, sorry. 5:31, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, well over 5 minutes. And some pretty solid stops in there. And so... Oh, David, one thing I meant to mention on your bad thing, just sort of as a tagline, on the very next shift, that same line scored to make it 4-1. So they did make amends for their mistake.
Yes, they did. On a greasy goal. So, yeah, they outscored the opposition this game. If, you know, and the I think I haven't checked Natural Stat Trick, but I think they are trying to match him against the Kopitar line. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously just a critical matchup for the Oilers and a difficult one. But if the Oilers can either saw that off or get the edge, they will beat the Kings.
Right.
Because not all else is much going on the Kings in terms of the attack.
Well, in tonight's game, according to the deserve to win O-meter, the Oilers deserve to, if they played 500 simulations of this game, the Oilers deserve to win 98.5% of them. 98.5%. That is a convincing victory.
Seems a bit high.
Well,
things can go awry, right? Like, you know, like they're just going, if you have that many quality of chances in the game, it's you're going to win 98. But you know, if one thing goes wrong early in the game, if Stuart Skinner doesn't stop Adrian Kempe's one-timer for a shot of the game, for instance.
Right.
So that's how
it's
I look at it.
A different game, and then the deserved win-o-meter would look different.
Because
the play would be different, right?
Yeah.
But according to the flow of play in this game, Edmonton was convincingly the far better team.
Yeah.
According to the deserved to win-o-meter.
Well, we had the grade A shots like 17-10, so I think we had it a little closer than the deserve to win O-meter. But anyway, Bruce, we've got to have a conundrum. Do we have one? Do you have a conundrum?
I'm not sure that I do, other than how do they avoid doing what they did in 2022 when they won game 3 at the crypto.com arena by a score of 8-2 and turned around to take a 2-1 series lead and then turned around and lost game 4-0. And the Kings got back in the series. So what do they need to do to press the advantage they established tonight and to, take full command of the series?
You know, there's a lot of puck luck in any game, and especially in like who gets the first goal or the first two goals. Like that's really critical. So if you can get the first goal, if things go your way, but my answer to that is it's something that you hear when you listen to the interviews closely with the Oilers. It's the old saw. McDavid said going into the first game, just another game, got to go out there and be in the moment, play our game. And that whole idea of be in the moment, play our game is repeated by many players in many of the interviews, and it's repeated by the coach and by the goalie. Mm-hmm. And I think it is how people deal with that kind of crushing pressure that seems crushing. They're not thinking about it. They're just thinking about that moment, forcing everything out of their minds And I think they're getting better at that. I hope that the Oilers are getting better at that. They're certainly saying that, I think, a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something you hear repeatedly, whereas maybe in past years you didn't. So they have lots of veteran players, plenty of veterans. I think that we have seen evidence also this year that they are capable of better defensive play. We've seen in games 1 and 3, super solid evidence of really strong defensive play from the Oilers. So between the right mindset and the right attitude towards defensive hockey and game management, I'm hoping this is a different team than we saw in previous years. Somewhat more mature team, a team ready to be in the moment and to execute properly in that moment. That's how you avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No argument. Let's hope that they solve that in the, you know, from the start of game 4, as opposed to, you know, taking their time to get involved in the game, as kind of happened in game 2. Like you say, 2 years ago, that game 4, it went all LA's way, and it was a blowout. It was a 10-goal swing from game 3 to game 4. Well, can't be having that.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yeah, it's interesting, Bruce. I've recently listened to an audiobook, this famous Japanese story of Musashi, who's the great samurai, Miyamoto Musashi. And he in the end comes to this climactic fight between his opponent, his nemesis in life, Kajiro Sasaki, who's this flamboyant character. And before the fight, even though he knows he shouldn't be thinking, all Sasaki can think about is winning. He's obsessed with winning. He's obsessed with the outcome. And the contrasted with that is Musashi. All he's thinking about is the day, the moment, mm-hmm. the day. And his one thought is he's going to act like a samurai. Whatever comes that day, he's just going to act like a samurai, like this disciplined approach. He's just thinking about the process, the moment. And it's interesting how old this idea is, how mm-hmm. ancient the idea of dealing with stress is. And we're hearing these same themes and ideas repeated with the Oilers to this day. And we, you know, throughout sports, you hear about, you know, people talk about this. So, you know, I'm not a sports psychologist, but or a samurai psychologist, but it struck me reading it, how similar kind of the thoughts and the language is around that. And I highly recommend the audiobook. It's free mm-hmm. on Audible. Yeah. Musashi, 50 mm-hmm. hours that you will spend listening to it. But a fantastic story.
How many pages of book would it take to take 50 hours to read? Like, is it a trilogy?
I think that's
a lot of hours.
Well, I think it's probably about 1,200 pages or 1,000 pages. Okay. The Musashi folktales are like 19 books, which were boiled down in the 1930s into a series of serialized newspaper stories in the Japanese media in 1935. And that's what this book is based on. And again, it's free. And I mean, I listened to Shogun, which a lot of people are watching on TV right now and have greatly enjoyed. This was as enjoyable as Shogun, the story itself. So. If you like that, maybe you like this. All right. Next game is
Sunday night, 8:30.
Yeah.
Then they have a 2-day break after Sunday. Game 5 will be back here in Edmonton on next Wednesday.
So. All righty. Bruce, let's wrap it up. Thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah. And special RIP to Bob Cole. Wonderful play-by-play man who, from my own home province of Newfoundland and Labrador. So this one lands especially close to home, but he was a great one. He lived a full life, 90 years old, and he will be missed and remembered. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.